Welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Hi, welcome to Peter's Podcast, the end of the world edition. It's interesting to think about how to approach today's podcast when we have an ongoing pandemic. We have riots in the streets in response to actions the police have taken. There are personal things that have gone on with me that seem senseless. And yet life goes on and we are asked to do what is best, do what is right, do actions that keep us in harmony, in what in yoga we call santosha, or contentment with the way that things are. I saw a meme on Facebook that was especially apropos. It was a picture of a big sign up on a wall somewhere, and it said, "I know everything happens for a reason, but what the fuck?" And definitely, there are moments in history when that's exactly what it feels like. What the fuck, you know? And to a large degree, many of us have been spared that in a big way, in a global way. We haven't had to deal with, say, armed conflict on our doorstep. We haven't had to face anything really personally dramatic, although many things emotionally felt very dramatic. Losing a relationship can feel incredibly dramatic. But right now, we are all, everyone in the world, being confronted with this challenge of a pandemic. And it's got everyone in an unusual state. I bumped into a few of the people who were on the Bali retreat, and one said, "I feel like I'm going through the stages of grief." And that's exactly true. That's exactly what's happening. And it's important to remember that we are human and we will have the human reactions to what is going on. And those human reactions to what is going on will include anger and the feeling of abandonment and trying to negotiate and all of those kinds of reactions that we have when we have a great loss. Because what we have right now is a loss of our regular way of being. And that's a bit of another way of saying a loss of our identity. And when our identity is challenged, it gives us this disturbance of the ground below us, right? Literally, the element of earth gets reduced. And without a strong balance of the element of earth in us, it feels unstable. And so a lot of us are suffering from that, this sense of instability. And that can lead us with the opposite issues, things that have too much movement and not enough stability. So mentally, that can feel like anxiety or fear or the inability to keep on track with something, the inability to focus on something. So all of these are unfortunate, but they're also natural outcomes. The way that we are to deal with them, the options for dealing with them are to either you know, arbitrary, let things roll, or practice, you know, take into account everything that you've been doing, how you've been doing it, and try to do it in a way that serves in the current situation. You stick with your practicing and you reap the benefits of your practicing. So I wanted to speak a little bit more specifically about what the pandemic is teaching us. And I think that one of the issues, one of the recommendations that yoga and other spiritual practices offer us is this idea of not being attached to things. And that can seem like a weird abstraction. What do you mean, don't be attached to something? So in answer to that question, what do you mean, don't be attached to something? We now have something that is disturbing everything we normally do. So if you were attached to a certain restaurant, you were attached to a certain routine, you were attached to a certain coffee shop, you were attached to having croissant for breakfast once in a while, you were attached to seeing your friends, you were attached to any number of things that in essence sort of build up into a personality, you know, this is me, I'm the kind of person who, right? This pandemic has given us all a really big lesson in don't be attached to that thing and not being attached to something isn't about punishment or it isn't about a kind of asceticism. Rather, it's about defining yourself by that thing. It's about when you are drawn through attraction or attraction's reflection, repulsion, those things take on this role in your being, in your mind, in your emotions, which eventually harden as your being. And it is that something outside is what is going to bring me happiness. What my world is about, right, is getting that thing. And we see this over and over again. People are driven by something and they, with passion and perseverance, pursue that thing and get that thing. Right? It's the nature of much of what goes on in the world. So when you dig into yoga as a practice, threatens a certain sensibility. It's like a different worldview. And in the yoga worldview, real yoga, not practicing asana, you know, and learning how to do handstands, but actually the worldview is that what we do on the outside is not the thing that's of primary import. It's important because we have to survive, we live, we find ourselves in certain circumstances, we have to act. And I don't mean we have to act, meaning that we choose to act, we should choose to act. I mean, literally, you cannot not act, right? Even saying I'm not going to do something is a sort of an action, an action of withdrawing from what's in front of you. But those things on the outside that we encounter, that we have to deal with, whether they be as wonderful as the raspberry Ciao Bella gelato that I just had at the end of my lunch today and got to experience the flavor of that, or whether it's a horrific thing that happens. All of those are things that are outside of us. They are there and they have an influence and an impact. They might even guide next steps or next actions or change the direction of what one does in the drama of living. But at the same time, in the yoga worldview, we are self-sustaining consciousness. This gets expressed so explicitly in classical yoga texts, texts like the Bhagavad Gita, or a text that I'm reading right now that's called Vasishtha's Yoga, which is the story of the education of Rama, one of the great deity incarnations in the history or legend of India. And in these texts, it couldn't be more explicit. It talks about our world and our experiences as being very much like the dreams that we have at night. There's a motivation in our mind that kicks off like an intention, some series of events that we then participate in. And the participation in those events is either neutral, you just do it, it's in front of you, so you do it, or it becomes, and the language is pretty dramatic in some of these texts, like a noose, right? The attraction to a particular outcome serves to bind you, and then you're the plaything of the events rather than the other way around. So this implies a kind of a power that we have that many of us don't realize we have. At Ishta, we call it unbound potential. And the unbound potential motto, which we, you know, have on some cool swag that you can pick up at Ishta, it can sound like, oh, wow, I have the potential to become anybody I want to out in the world. I just have to have the right, you know, practice or attitude or be able to come the right number of times to class or master the right posture or something like that. Nothing could be farther from the the truth on that. You might become something other than what you are in the material world, in your job or something like that. But what unbound potential is refers to your potential to become unbound. And unbound means infinite, everything. In the classical yoga writings, what is infinite and everything goes by the name of Brahman. And sometimes it's a benefit to have this tradition of Sanskrit names for things. Other times it's a little bit of a curse because you get the baggage that that thing carries. In the case of calling something the name of something that's sometimes a deity or a god or something like that, you run into, you know, potential conflict with people who don't believe in that kind of thing, right? That's part of their identity. And so if it rubs you the wrong way to think about, you know, sort of a religious aspect of something, what we're talking about when we're talking about Brahman is bigger than any religion. It's bigger than religion and science together. It's everything. Right? So we could call it everything, but that's a sort of a vague word, right? In English, at least. So, and when you've been involved with yoga for a while, you find that the benefit of having this language that's been explicitly used for this worldview is that it already has an established meaning that it's bigger than everything because it's literally unbound. So when scientists look back at the nature of the universe and place the Big Bang at a certain moment, and yogis in their musings or meditations or however they did it come up with the idea of a world that's evolved over millions of years, and those things sort of converge, that's all still about the universe in its current incarnation, in its current manifestation. Brahman is bigger than that. It's literally the prior millions of years incarnation of a world, and so forth. It's anything that could be. So where this comes in of any value to us in the state of pandemic lockdown is to a practitioner of yoga, we're looking at ourselves in this worldview where Brahman exists. And so everything is Brahman, because Brahman is what exists. It's unbound. There is nothing it is not. And this could be like a mind fuck, like, what are you talking about, right? But if you allow yourself to ponder that, and this is what we ultimately want to do as part of practice. We have in practice this notion of, you know, purification and then self-study and then surrender. And those things, those three parts, help you to get to a place of meditation. Meditation is a place of breaking out of our normal way of thinking about things when we're engaged in worldly stuff. When we have this identity and we're dealing with what seems so important and our desires and the things we don't want, all of that stuff. When we do meditation, it gives us a chance to break out of that kind of mental activity. And when we do, we notice, hey, something else is there. It's different. There's a something more to me. And even if we don't have that explicit thought, we start to notice that we're different. We feel different as we're going through our day, as we're going through our relationships, as we're going through thinking about what do I want to do with my life? What is my purpose? We start to notice shifts in our priorities. All of this comes about because what we're doing is realigning ourselves. Literally, we're realigning ourselves with the part of us that is more akin to Brahman and less infatuated, engrossed in this individuality that we all also participate in. So we have yogis to thank for recognizing this, for having this experience thousands of years ago. Thousands. I mean, imagine that. Something that's been going on for thousands of years, never as an organization, not to make money, literally as a way of passing on, I recognize you're in suffering. Here's something you can do that will help bring you to a place of understanding and peace. That's the point. So, has it been corrupted over time? Yes, because the world, that place where we're all individuals and we're dealing with the repercussions of one thing and another, there are always going to be stories, drama, challenge. And when you have that, clearly there's corruption, right? Then there's also its flip side, because in the world of duality, everything has its flip side. So there's also great works of goodness at the same time that there's corruption. So what does this have to do with non-attachment? What we're noticing right now is we're having to struggle to deal with the fact that all the things we used to do are challenged. So we have two ways to react to that. One is to deny that it's that way, to say, no, it's not. I don't have to do this. And you see quite a few people are having that reaction, right? They're saying, I don't believe it, or they're believing somebody else who says, nah, you don't have to believe that, it's not true. And because that helps to satisfy this sort of crisis in their identity, they're going, oh good, I don't have to believe it, I won't believe it, thank you. Right? It's a security thing. And humans are literally wired to not want uncertainty. So if someone presents something that's more certain, that helps alleviate this feeling of uncertainty, they're likely to go for it, even if it brings more pain, which psychologists say, kind of shocking, but true. So those who are still on the fence about what to do haven't just denied that they don't have to deal with the reality. We have a chance to say, okay, so all those things about me that I'm wanting, that I'm attached to doing, that I feel like, why can't I do that? This moment gives you an opportunity to try on non-attachment, to try to live, be yourself without those things defining you, without spending the time with the other person who used to think completed you, or with the food that you thought defined your aesthetic, or maybe your pleasure. Or you can't go to places that you used to think defined you, like I'm the traveler. I'm used to going here and there and everywhere else. And so on and so on. You have your own examples. You're the things in your life that are really bugging you that you can't do. To not do them is just either a WTF situation, or it could be a place of inquiry, a place of saying to yourself, wow, isn't this weird? I'm just doing nothing. I'm just hanging out. What should I be doing? Right? And in that questioning, in that pondering, you start to invite the possibilities. You start to invite the potential of seeing yourself in a different way, of noticing, because now things stopped. Before, you, it was hard to notice because everybody was in motion. But now that there's the stopping, you have the possibility of that self-inquiry. Maybe I'll pick up this book that I've been meaning to read. Maybe I'll pick up this set of paints that I've been meaning to play with. Maybe I'll spend a little extra time trying to do my meditation practice. Maybe I'll reach out to that person online who I haven't spoken to for a long time, but I've been missing. Mostly, thankfully, you know, I'm grateful that so much of our ability to teach has stayed, that people have been willing to come online to classes and to workshops, to trainings. And so I've realized that teaching in this way is actually kind of wonderful. And it was something that I've resisted for ages. And I still am a little maybe suspicious of sort of one-off kinds of things that are pre-recorded when there's not interaction. But that notion was preventing me from doing a lot of what I'm doing now that's really wonderful. And also I've picked up books that I meant to read, and also I've reached out to people that I don't talk to that often. And it's also made me have to deal with some things that my way of dealing with them was to have a tamasic reaction of getting out of there, right? And instead, because I can't go anywhere, I'm required to just be with the thing. You know, Pema Chodron and some of those other teachers who come from a really strong Buddhist place talk a lot about like sitting with your challenge, sitting with your pain, to let it wash over you and to recognize that you can come out the other side with something gained. So that's another thing that we're getting from this requirement to not be focused on that thing that we were so attached to, but rather to be with what is, to allow for this to be. The second thing I wanted to talk about today is something that my primary advice would be, if you're white, don't talk about this. So I'm ignoring my own advice for just a moment because I'm going to put on the hat of the yogi rather than the white person. The great racial challenge in our world is an example of one of the fundamental things that is the world's nature. And I spoke about it a little bit in the previous segment, about this notion of attachment, of desire, of repulsion. And the challenge that we have around liking some people, caring about some people, seeing some people as the good and seeing other people as the bad, it's been with humanity probably forever. It's at least been with humanity for all of known history. And as a yogi, when we see another person, we're encouraged to use a greeting, namaste. This word namaste, it means something akin to, you know, I notice a light in you, your light is the same as my light, things like that. But really the meaning of namaste, the intention of namaste, is exactly what I was talking about in the last segment and why I wanted to talk about the two things together. That right, as soon as you see someone as an other, you've missed this giant point of yoga that Brahman is, and that what goes on through our senses and our sensory world is this great drama. And how you relate to that great drama is up to you. We have, as part of the workings of the universe, this thing that's called niyati in Sanskrit. And niyati is like the biggest level description of cause and effect. It means that something happens that will manifest something else. That things will continue to create more things. So the nature of being in life is to endure and generate causes and effects. And where you find yourself today is the effect of many, many causes that have been coming through generations of us. We find ourselves together believing the same kinds of things because of the causes and effects of so many things that have brought us here. We find ourselves in a moment when we are so polarized, and literally polarized means to be at two ends of a dual spectrum. The fact is that the spectrum is a wholeness. It's everything. And so when things are on one end of the spectrum or on the other end of the spectrum, they're still just a reflection of a similar thing. When you take them at their highest point, you have Brahman, which we talked about previously. The initial division of Brahman becomes the ability of perceiving something and something to perceive. There's a difference in that between those two things. And the more that we evolve, right, from the Big Bang onward, we move through elemental forces, the earth-like force, the liquid-like force, the air-like force, the fire-like force, the space-like force. And we go from those primary elements into individual episodes of those things. And that evolves into a myriad of kinds of things, and that evolves into living things, and that evolves into varieties of living things, and then all of the sort of pseudo-biological things like groups of people, herds of animals, flocks of birds, schools of fish, classes of bacteria, and on and on and on, all of the diversity that springs from an initial thing, an initial splitting of a wholeness. I was listening to a podcast that I would highly recommend. It's called With Friends Like These, and the current season of With Friends Like These podcast is about converts. And it's talking about how we become so polarized and how difficult it is for us to have a change of mind. And the description that a scientist, a psychologist gave of polarization was useful in this regard because it looks exactly like the map I just drew. At the top of a polarization, you can think of it like the top point of a pyramid. And at that top point of the pyramid, there was a decision made. And the decision could either be one way or the other way. And whoever makes one decision goes down one side of the pyramid, and whoever makes the other decision goes down the other side of the pyramid. So they started at exactly the same place together in unison. But because of that decision, they start this cascade of cause and effect that ultimately leads them to be at the base of the pyramid in the present moment. And at the base, they are so far apart. And it becomes almost impossible for them to come closer, to come close enough to make a difference. Where yogis have an advantage is that we have this other way of looking at who we are. We can transcend that sensory duality, polarity of existence, and reconnect with the part of us that is oneness. When we do that, and we see the other as being just like I was way back at this point, that's namaste. That there is a place at which we are the same, right? Not the same like in the course of history, the same in the course of manifestation, that oneness is still what we are. And we're in this role right now with this certain cause and effect behind us that places us in a particular place. When you can start to look at the other from that perspective as just like you, but the circumstances that have caused them to be where they are different from the ones in this great play of life that have brought you to where you are. At our essences, though, we are the same. So that doesn't mean you need to condone anybody's action. It doesn't mean that in the society that we've built, they're right or somebody's wrong. But what it gives you the possibility of is to not judge that person as what they are, but to be able to start to create some nuance in the way that we see them that lets you be able to criticize an action without criticizing a person or criticizing this person's actions around something and still recognize the person. Right? So there is in all of us a great number of thoughts and ideas and beliefs, but they're very mixed up. They're very convoluted. I was just reading a very lovely note from one of my stepson's friends. He passed it on from somebody he pays attention to in the activist community. And that person was saying, be careful about attributing just one motivation to the various people who are acting up in this moment of chaos, right? That many people with many agendas are seeing this moment as a potential chance to act on their particular reasons, right? To act for their cause. But to take this back into the realm of yoga, when we look at all of the players in any situation, whether it's as, you know, horrific as the murder of someone or the accidental killing of someone or the collateral injury to someone who's protesting something that they think is justice or protesting an injustice and so forth. All of these pieces are small pieces of a puzzle of a person who's driven by their history, by their best logic and emotion around what's happening in their life. And so, to, like I say, step out of the role of being a white person, a privileged white person in America, and to stay behind this fence, this spectator fence, but to speak from the perspective of yoga, if you can, try to spend some of your time in reflection after silence, after meditation, after taking the time to separate from the place where we are engaging in the senses and we're pausing that and saying, what else am I? And to have that experience, not that you have to call it Brahman, but to just have whatever experience you have of yourself when you're not identifying 100% with your individualness, right? With what Vasishtha's yoga calls your ego sense of being me and I, and that's mine, and I'm doing this. When you can back out of that enough to feel like part of the wholeness. And then if you can take some time in pondering that afterwards, then the divinity within each person can shine despite all of the cause and effect that's placing them in the current situation. And then, namaste, is something that you can actually say and know what it means. Right? And it's one of those things, you know, in yoga, there's this notion, pratipaksha bhavanam, to when a thought is in error and you're trying to reprogram it, you take on the opposite notion. So to try to learn to say that even when you don't even know what it means is also a kind of a starting a new groove, right? And combine that with your time that you spend in pondering what could that possibly mean. There's an episode of Queer Eye in which a person that they're doing the makeover on is paralyzed from the waist down because of an incident. If you have a chance, you might want to check that incident out, because there's an example of a great healing that takes place through trying to see what is there in the other person. And also, it's important to remember that there's a grieving process. And when we see a part of our world in a loss, like we have right now, we will go through all of the stages, including the anger stage, including the giving up kind of stage, including the bargaining kind of stage. So for all of you out there who are feeling angry, who are feeling sad, who are in despair, I would recommend highly that you spend some time in your yoga. A dear friend of mine and student had a loss recently, and you know, after communicating with me about what happened, very shortly after wrote me and said, "What mantra should I use?" And that's a demonstration of how your practice can come to your aid when you need it. Because I don't know what your individual circumstances are, and mantras are very specific, if there's a mantra that you tend to use that helps you feel strong, that helps you feel better, go ahead and use that. The Sanskrit word for a calm and a peacefulness, which are the conditions that we would like to generate, right? From your own peacefulness, you bring peace into the world. The Sanskrit word for that is shanti. So you could just recite shanti, shanti, shantihi. The little ihi at the end is actually the whole length of the word. And if you like, you could just add that to the mantra that you typically use. So I wish those of you who are feeling a little superior to what's going on, that, you know, it's like other people are having this problem, to take a little bit of time also with this notion of namaste. You know, there's this old saying, but for the grace of God, there go I, right? Other people are no different from us. So when you see someone else suffering, when you see someone else in challenge, know that you and they have nothing different about each other, right? You just are in different circumstances, and you've arrived at those different circumstances because of different causes and effects. But at your essence, they're just trying to do what you're trying to do. It's been really delightful to see the support for the healthcare workers that occurs at 7 o'clock in New York City in Manhattan. That's an example. These other people are having to deal with this immense challenge, and we're rising to our highest sense of self with a capital S. They are like us. We are like them. We are joining with them. That is what namaste means. Hari Om Om Tat Sat, which invites us to experience things as they really are and to sustain as we're trying to deal with them. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. May you find peace within yourself, peace with others, and peace with the circumstances that you encounter. Namaste. That's today's episode. Thanks a lot for listening to Peter's podcast. I hope that you find real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living through your practice. Please support me on Patreon, rate the podcast, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.